Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Our top story. A Chinese man pleaded guilty to being an illegal foreign agent for Beijing in California. He shares extensive connections with an elected U.S. official. President Trump is heading to Asia. High on the agenda, trade tensions with China.
As of November 1st, China will have about 155% tariff put on it. And I don't think it's sustainable for them.
Some American semiconductor makers are finding themselves in a tricky situation. Details on what sensitive information China is demanding from them. The founder of Cambodian conglomerate Prince Group, Tin Chi, has been indicted by U.S. authorities on charges of wire fraud and conspiracy to money launder. This raises key questions. How did he build his business empire? Is there Chinese red capital backing him? And what ties, if any, exist between the Prince Group and Chinese intelligence agencies? One more case tied to the Chinese regime's effort in influencing U.S. politics is tackled by the Justice Department. Earlier this month, a Chinese man living in California pleaded guilty to being an illegal foreign agent for Beijing. The news just broke on Tuesday. He shares extensive connections with an elected U.S. official and a sentenced Chinese spy. The three individuals belong to a bigger scheme of Beijing's infiltration. According to the agreement, Sun worked as Beijing's agent from 2022 to 2024 before he was arrested. Now he is facing a maximum 10 years in prison, on top of a fine of up to $250,000. He may be deported as part of the penalty. So what exactly did Sun do? Court documents say Sun and another individual were operating a media site to promote pro-CCP propaganda in the U.S. under the instructions of Chinese officials. The individual was later elected as a local councilwoman, with Sun helping in their campaign. Sun also worked closely with another Chinese spy, Chen Jun. Chen has already been sentenced. Chen called Sun and the local politician, quote, a basic team dedicated for us. During the election, Chen instructed Sun to submit reports with details for the United Front and the Big Boss to review. United Front refers to the United Front Work Department, an intelligence and propaganda arm of the CCP. And the Big Boss likely refers to a high-level official from China. Although court documents did not name the individual, public documents show Sun worked as a campaign treasurer for Councilwoman Eileen Wong, who now still works at Arcadia City Hall. The story gets better. Sun is also the councilwoman's fiancé and used her address for DMV service, according to court records. An official from the city hall said Wong had not been charged and would cooperate with the federal investigation. And what about the sentenced Chinese spy Chen Jun? Chen is currently serving his 20-month sentence for bribing the IRS to target Falun Gong practitioners and their organizations. Falun Gong is a spiritual discipline. The followers in China are facing severe persecution by the Chinese regime. There are growing concerns that Beijing has built a network of operatives across America to influence U.S. politics and carry out transnational repression against Chinese dissidents outside China. President Trump is heading to Asia. He's confirmed several stops on his upcoming tour, where he's expected to discuss trade, investments, and regional security. NTD's Daniel Monahan takes a closer look at the trip, which will also include a meeting with Chinese Communist Party leader Xi Jinping.
The first stop of President Trump's Asia trip is Malaysia, which is hosting the ASEAN Summit from October 26th to the 28th. That's the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Trump is expected to attend on the first day. Malaysian officials have said that Trump is looking forward to joining the signing of a ceasefire deal between Thailand and Cambodia, one of several peace deals Trump helped broker. Conflict between Thailand and Cambodia broke out in July. 43 people were killed and 300,000 were displaced during 5 days of fighting. Next up is Japan. Trump is scheduled to travel there on October 27th for a 3-day visit. The trip will occur just after Japan's parliament elected the conservative Sanaya Takaichi. Takaichi said that the Japan-U.S. alliance is the cornerstone of Japan's foreign and security policy and that she plans to strengthen ties. She is expected to meet with Trump on October 28th to talk about regional security. Japan has seen increased Chinese military activity around its territory in recent years and ramped up joint drills with allies, including the United States, in response. The country signed a trade deal last month that lowers tariffs on Japanese goods to 15% in exchange for $550 billion in investments in the U.S. Then comes South Korea, which is hosting the APEC summit from October 31st to November 1st. Trump is expected to visit ahead of the summit from October 29th to the 30th. Trump is expecting to meet with Chinese Communist leader Xi Jinping while there. Trump also suggested yesterday that the meeting might not happen.
Maybe it won't happen. Maybe it won't happen. It was a one-sided. Honestly, we built China's military with the money that we lost for so many years getting ripped off.
Trump's planned meeting with Xi comes just days before a potential new tariff on Chinese goods goes into effect.
As of November 1st, China will have about 155% tariff put on it. And I don't think it's sustainable for them.
Trump says he wants to be nice to China.
But China's been very rough with us over the years because we had presidents that weren't smart from a business standpoint.
An update on U.S.-Russia relations. President Trump said Tuesday he is holding off on plans to meet with President Putin in Hungary in the coming weeks.
No, I don't want to have a wasted meeting. I don't want to have a waste of time, so I'll see what happens.
The decision to hold off on the meeting was made following a call earlier on Tuesday between Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Trump says he has advocated for using the current battlefield lines as the basis of a peace deal.
The battlefield lines, and you pull back and you go home and everybody takes some time off because you got two countries that are killing each other. Two countries are losing 5,000 to 7,000 soldiers a week. So we'll see what happens.
And NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte is set to meet with Trump on Wednesday at the White House. Rutte made preparations to travel to Washington after Trump's meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky last week. Daniel Monahan, NTD News.
Besides President Trump, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and U.S. Trade Representative Jamieson Greer are also heading to Malaysia. They'll meet with their Chinese counterparts to discuss China's rare earth export controls. Here's Greer discussing those export curbs on CNBC on Wednesday.
It was incredibly aggressive. It was totally disproportional to anything that the U.S., the EU, or Canada, or anybody did. Because remember, these are global measures that the Chinese have put in place to purport to control the movement or export of any item containing certain rare earths from one country to another, right? Even if China's not one of the parties in the agreement.
Korea also said China's measures violated a commitment that officials made months ago to keep supplying rare earth minerals. He also accused the Chinese regime of wanting to exert economic control over the world. Greer says the U.S. needs to rebalance trade with China after decades of very limited access to Chinese markets. But he noted there's still a good landing zone where the two countries can trade non-sensitive goods in a more balanced way.
The top economic official of the European Union said on Wednesday the bloc was considering countermeasures in response to China's curbs on rare earth exports. China is asking some American semiconductor makers to submit sensitive information about their business that includes their balance sheets and income statement. The move comes amid mounting trade tensions between the U.S. and China. President Trump and Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping are expected to meet in South Korea later this month. Chinese authorities on Wednesday asked American companies who make certain analog IC chips imported to China to fill out questionnaires. They asked for data on how the costs and profits for these chips differ in the U.S. and China. Beijing also requested data on U.S. companies' sales activities in China, plus balance sheets, cash flow, and income statements in the past 3 years. This is part of China's anti-dumping probe into U.S. analog chipmakers. Companies have 37 days to respond. China did not name the American companies they targeted. The Cambodian Prince Group and its founder Chen Ji, designated by the U.S. as a transnational criminal organization, are under investigation by multiple countries worldwide. On Monday, we reported on the double life of Chen. Publicly, he's seen as a top business figure in Cambodia, active in charity, and a senior advisor to both the current and former prime ministers. He holds multiple nationalities, including Cambodian and British citizenships. But behind the scenes, he's accused of running at least 10 scam compounds across Cambodia, operations that blend human trafficking, forced labor, torture, and wire fraud. Little was known about his early years, except that he's from Huzhou in China's Fujian province and once worked in an internet cafe. How he built his empire in Cambodia remains unclear. Recently, Chinese media began publishing coordinated reports framing him and his scam empire as a criminal network formed by former internet cafe operators from Fujian. Yet a former Chinese intelligence officer claims Chen and the Prince Group are tied to Beijing's overseas espionage network.
In 2023, a former Chinese agent known as Eric defected to Australia. He revealed that the Chinese Communist Party often uses businesses to fund and conceal overseas intelligence operations. Prince Group is a typical example. A company Eric says supports China's secret missions abroad, including transnational repression, targeting dissidents, and money laundering. Eric himself once worked under the cover of Prince Group. He claims to have witnessed senior police officials from Beijing and Chongqing meeting at the private club of Prince Group's boss, Chen Zhi, to plot the capture of a certain dissident. According to Eric, the U.S. crackdown on Prince Group is tied to its deep involvement in Beijing's geopolitical activities. On social media, Eric posted recruitment forms, rental contracts, and bank statements linked to the group. Meanwhile, Chinese-Canadian writer Sheng Shui says Chen Zhi is a relative of Huang Kunming, the party's secretary of Guangdong province, and connected to Xi Jinping's family. Analysts say Huang is a key member of Xi's inner circle.
A group of Japanese shipbuilders is planning to invest over $2 billion to double the number of ships the country makes. They aim to install large cranes and other facilities to shore up Japan's shipbuilding base. The U.S. and Japan have stepped up their cooperation following President Trump's pledge to counter China's dominance in shipbuilding. The U.S. has started charging fees on Chinese-built ships that call at American ports. Following the move, some fleet owners are now rethinking orders from Chinese yards. In the meantime, Japanese shipyards have been seeing a growing number of inquiries. China controls half of the world's commercial ship production. U.S. shipyards have been in decline for decades. Back in 1975, America built 70 ships per year. Today, that number is down to just 5. Coming up, the Trump administration is considering major retaliation against China's rare earth export controls. What card does the U.S. have that can deal Beijing a heavy blow? And how are we seeing the rise and fall of societies play out around the world? Gregory Copley unpacks what constitutes nobility and stability in governance in his new book, The Noble State: Governance Options in an Ignoble Era.
We saw all of these great totalitarian movements say that they were going to equalize society and remove the upper echelons, the privileged classes and the like. And in fact, they didn't. They just created new hierarchies and new leaderships, new pyramidal structures.
More on that after the break here on China in Focus. Welcome back to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. The Trump administration is weighing a major retaliation against China's rare earth export controls. The plan aims to curb a wide range of software-powered exports to China, from laptops to jet engines.
The Chinese announced on October 8th this wide-ranging export controls on rare earth magnets, just on rare earths, all over the world. This is China versus the globe. It's not just on the U.S. We are contemplating if we are not able to negotiate a pause or relief on this regime, how the U.S. and the allies would respond.
If the plan comes into effect, it would mark a major escalation in Washington's showdown with Beijing, though the plan may also not move forward. U.S. stock indexes dipped at the news. The S&P 500 is down 0.8% and the Nasdaq dropped 1.3%. Earlier this month, President Trump put out a Truth Social saying he may slap a tariff of 100% on China starting November 1st, plus export controls on any and all critical software. He wrote this is in response to China stating they were going to impose large-scale export controls on virtually every rare earth product made in China. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said he expects to meet with Chinese Vice Premier He Lifeng this week. That's ahead of the expected meeting between Trump and Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping later this month. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins says the USDA will resume distributing aid to farmers frozen by the government shutdown. Rollins said the Farm Service Agency will resume operations on Thursday, processing farm loans and managing federal aid programs. She said President Trump will not let what she called the radical left Democrat shutdown impact critical USDA services while harvest is underway. The secretary added that more than $3 billion in aid will go out to farmers and that the administration is preparing a package for those hit by China's halt in soybean purchases. Trump said soybeans will be a major topic if he meets Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping at the APEC summit in South Korea. With trade tensions still simmering between the U.S. and China, there's an increasing focus on the two different types of governance, what ultimately unites a country, and how successful have the different forms of rule been around the world. We spoke with Gregory Copley, president of the International Strategic Studies Association, about his new book, The Noble State: Governance Options in an Ignoble Era, and asked what constitutes nobility and stability in governance. Gregory Copley, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you back on the show.
Wonderful to be with you again, Tiffany.
Well, you actually have a new book that just came out. Let's make sure you can see it on screen. It's called The Noble State: Governance Options in an Ignoble Era. Now, this is actually like your 37th book. I didn't realize you had so many, but I think it's very topical because right now there's a lot of discussion about the different forms of government around the world, how successful or not they are. First, what inspired you to write this book?
There are a number of things. Firstly, the world is in a state of chaos, as we keep talking about, particularly on China in focus. And we're seeing, in a sense, the collapse of the Chinese governance model right now. We're seeing disruptions to governments around the world, some saying it's the end of Western civilization, or at least a transformation of Western civilization. The U.S. seems to be in a new governance model or approaching that. But we know that all governance styles have a lifespan, and empires the same, big powers the same, an average lifespan of about 250 years. They can go longer or shorter, but the reality is that these are human-created organisms, and they have finite lifespans. And we're now coming to the end, if you like, of that lifespan of modern republics and modern democracies. That's not to say that democracy or republicanism is going to disappear anytime soon. It will certainly come back in different forms. We've seen the recycling, if you like, of democracy over the millennia. We're certainly seeing that collapse and that chaos around the world right now, and that's going to affect us all economically. And look at the protests and riots in France, for example. We've seen them throughout much of Europe. We've seen them in the United States. We're certainly now seeing them in the People's Republic of China. So the question is, do we start to just try to hold everything together? Or do we say, okay, this is what we want to keep from society, and this is what we want to get rid of, and this is what we want to install in new societies? So we have this opportunity right now, if we think about it. And the reality is that because of the urgent pressures of economic collapse, poverty, starvation, rioting, and the like, we haven't devoted time to thinking about the future. And this book, in a very brief way, attempts to do that.
I mean, there's definitely a lot to unpack here. I want to touch on a couple of points. Right now, I think you are hearing more and more around the world conversations about what makes a country unique. You know, what is that uniting quality? You know, there's a lot of talks about immigration, remigration, all these different aspects of it. You talk in the book about how it is nobility, which is the great civilizer. Talk to us about how do you define nobility? How does that play into a society and the success of one?
Well, yes, and nobility is a factor which I say is important both for the leadership and for the people themselves. And quite often, what we want to see in societies are great values, great ethical values, great social values, great humanitarian values, and so on, embodied within our society. You know, we saw all of these great totalitarian movements say that they were going to equalize society and remove the upper echelons, the privileged classes and the like. And in fact, they didn't. They just created new hierarchies and new leaderships, new pyramidal structures. And we need something which can't be attacked and pulled apart because it's man-made. In the United States, if you like, the crowning pinnacle of the United States identity and culture and values was always the Constitution. But this is a man-made symbol, and it's now, we're seeing, being torn at and attacked widespreadly because people say, well, this is a human-created document. We can change it at any time, or we can disregard it at any time. With constitutional monarchies, you tend to have this vision of the crown embodying the values, and the more that the crown speaks, the less that it has, more it becomes human, and therefore not necessarily the embodiment of a symbolism. This is a book which is not a, if you like, an idealistic kumbaya sort of book. It talks about the practicalities of how societies rise and fall, how totalitarian movements rise and fall, how autocracy is generally an answer to people's cry for an improvement in their condition or an improvement in their life, which doesn't mean necessarily just an improvement in their economic conditions, but an improvement in how they see themselves. Are they proud to be whatever nationality they are, American, Chinese, British, Australian, and the like? So obviously we're seeing in the People's Republic of China right now a massive amount of discontent, which is not going to be resolved solely through improved sense of identity and pride in history and the like, because the economic situation has become so bad. But what we see as a response to that human condition by the Communist Party of China, for example, is not to improve those human conditions, but rather to suppress and demand loyalty to the point of, if you like, slavery.
Well, it's been a very fascinating conversation. We have so much more to dig into in your book. But Gregory Copley, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tiffany.
That's all for today's China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. If you have any feedback on the show or have something you'd like to see us cover, send us an email at chinainfocus@ntd.com. We'd love to hear from you. For on-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app. Thanks for watching. See you tomorrow.